Hello, who? Does it smell a bit like piss?
I can't smell piss.
I got like a small waft of that, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
It's me. Maybe I smell like piss.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
No, it's not you.
Sometimes you have those days where you just smell like piss all day.
I can't smell it now.
It could be, is that flavoured water? It might be the flavoured water. It's that. That's what it is.
Oh, it does actually smell a bit like piss.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. It's definitely that.
What is in that, Alice?
Hello everyone, welcome to Out of Print, your weekly podcast where we get a text and we get a topic and we see what it can reveal about us and life in our 20s. I'm Alice.
I'm Emmeline.
And I'm Sophie.
And this is Out of Print.
Felt really awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kicking you off this week by talking about Dada and meme culture. And as a result, I'd like to talk about our favourite jokes. Now, full context, I have tried to basically, there's a joke that I really want to tell, and okay. I've basically arranged a whole episode around telling it.
Okay. Also, for context for listeners, we didn't know that this was being sprung upon us. So I'm thinking very quickly on my feet about what is my favourite joke.
I know what Sophie's favourite joke is, and it's really annoying.
Yeah,
so I'm already annoyed.
I don't know. I know. That's beautiful. Joke. I'm excited. I like a good joke.
Okay.
It's not good.
No,
it's really bad.
It's not only very long, but 90% of people I tell it to really don't enjoy it.
Maybe it's just, I have a joke that's a bit like that as well. This is what the whole episode's going to be. My favourite joke is a joke that my granddad used to tell that's a bit like that.
Yeah.
Shall I tell it?
You tell it and then I'll do mine.
Okay, great. And then Alice, you'll have to tell one as well.
We'll
warm you up, Soph.
Yeah, I'll have
a little think, yeah.
So there are three men in heaven stood around chatting to each other and they're making small talk. And one of them turns around to the other and he says, "So how did you die?" And he says, "Well, I was coming home late one night from work. My missus was in bed asleep. I didn't want to wake her up. So I was tiptoeing around the house, shut the door, crawled upstairs to bed, and walked into my room, and I could sense this odd presence in there. There was a shape underneath the duvets. Lo and behold, I was pretty certain that there was another man in my marital bed and that my wife was having an affair. Got up, pulled back the sheets, out this man sprung. I panicked." No, I told it wrong.
It's hard. It's hard.
I haven't told this joke as ages. I'm trying to remember. It's got quite a long winded. We'll go back. One man turns around to the other and says, "So how did you die?" So one man says, "Well, I was coming home one night, late from work. My missus was in bed, and I just had a sense that something wasn't quite right. Got into the bedroom. There was an odd stray hair here or there. A few shoes flung around the room." That's a lie. A shoe. I don't know. Guys, I'm struggling.
This is a fucking disaster.
I haven't told this joke in ages.
You've never told this joke ever by the sounds of it.
And my missus, pretending to be asleep. I wasn't having it. I went around the house, looked around the room. I'm really struggling.
Suck it off.
I feel like I've had like 7 pints and I'm trying to tell the Uber driver where I live.
She bears a lot to remember. I can't even remember one joke.
Look, so and then over here, I'm going to get, it's come back to me. And then I look out the window and there's a man pulling his trousers up. And I think, I'm not having that. So I go into the kitchen, grab the fridge, fling the fridge out of the room onto the man who's pulling his trousers up, and I have a heart attack. So that's man number one. Man number
God,
two says...
God, we're only a man number one.
Man number two says... I turn to man number two and they say, "So how did you die?" And he says, "Well, I was a gardener. And I was going to do some late night gardening on one of my clients' gardens. And I was there putting my overalls on. And suddenly a fridge fell over me. And I died because..."
Fell over.
Guys, I'm struggling. I'm really not that engaged today.
You came in saying you felt energized.
I do feel energized, but kind of just in the wrong direction.
She's just mad.
Feel drunk.
And then finally, it's not going to hit now because I spent so much time building this punchline up. They turn around to man number three and they say to man number three, "So how did you die?" And he says, "Well, I was in a fridge."
Oh, for God's sake.
That one's terrible.
It's not. It's actually not a bad joke, but I told it awfully. And I'm not doing my granddad proud. I'm so sorry.
No, he'd love it.
My beautiful granddad.
He would love how much you enjoyed telling that joke.
Yeah. Actually, that I really need to rework that. That would have not, if I'd have been doing stand up comedy, that would have not gone down.
Tighten up your quick 15.
Yes. Alice, you got to tell a joke.
I'm trying to think if I know any like just basic one liners. But I don't even know if I
surely
do.
Chicken road.
Like, I know that we're one. Not, we as young women are not in the practice of telling jokes.
That's a lie.
Who the fuck are you talking to? Emeline and I have loads of jokes. You just don't like jokes.
I love
Alice
a joke.
Alice hates jokes. And I've always
said I just feel like I really associate telling jokes or the act of telling jokes with like my uncle.
Okay, well on that topic, I'd like to tell my favourite joke now. This is more for Emmeline, really.
Yeah, I already know it.
And I don't even tell it properly, and I also stole it off a comedian called Kieran, who does the Tea With Me podcast with Shane Todd, which is a really great podcast, by the way. So there's an English beekeeper, an Irish beekeeper, and a Scottish beekeeper.
I already like this joke.
And they all keep bees. And they're all discussing about, you know, bee welfare and such. Alice, get off your phone when I'm telling my joke.
Sorry. I was trying to find the name of something. I'm back.
Better have been the name of my beekeepers. So, I'll start from the start. There's an English beekeeper, a Scottish beekeeper, and an Irish beekeeper, and obviously they all keep bees. And...
Thanks
and
for
obviously
telling me
they
that.
All keep bees.
Obviously, yeah. They all keep bees.
I wouldn't have got that to be fair.
And the English beekeeper is like, you know, I have three large hives and I have, you know, sort of 50 bees split across the hives. And I get about one jar of honey a week. And, you know, it's a really nice life for the bees. They have a lot of space to move around and stuff. And then the Irish beekeeper says, oh, that's great. You know, I've got two sort of, you know, medium-sized hives, and I've got about 200 bees, and, like, obviously there's a little bit less space for them, but, you know, I get four jars of honey a week, and obviously it's great, and it's still a very comfortable life for the bees. And the Scottish beekeeper says, I have one very small hive, and I have 1,000 bees in it, and I get 100 jars of honey a week. And the English beekeeper turns around to him and says, is that not a really horrible life for the bees? And the Scottish beekeeper says, fuck 'em.
Yeah.
You've heard this joke so many times and you really don't like it.
I just like how funny you find it.
I think when you first told it, you also took a lot longer to tell it because I think you were like doing what Emmeline was doing where you were rusty.
A good joke does require you to be well oiled verbally.
Yeah, you have to be well rehearsed. You have to know what comes after what.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it.
I got a little chuckle.
I liked it better that time than the first time that you told it.
That's good. I'm glad it's, you know, it's a grower.
It's aged okay.
It's a grower, not a shower.
I heard it like for the first time a couple of years ago, probably.
So I've been telling this joke for years, to be fair. Okay, so there actually is a sort of very tenuous link between my favourite joke and the punchline being fucking with the theme of this episode, which is Dada. I'm not sure how much you guys know about it. The art movement, Dada?
A little bit.
It's like nonsense and absurdism, right?
Something yeah, like yeah. Probably closer to absurdism rather than nonsense. Because, and I only know that because this episode was originally going to be about nonsense poetry. Mm. And then I couldn't shoehorn my joke into nonsense poetry.
And that was really important.
That was really important.
I hear that. It's kind of World War One timings, right? Is that
bang
right?
Bang on. Yeah. So Dada was an artistic movement in the early 20th century after the First World War. Mm-hmm. Bang on the money. And it was formed in protest against capitalist society. It's like primarily European, which makes sense in the context of like the World Wars, but it had like a small like New York pocket as well, as with most art movements. Basically, the whole premise behind it is that Dada doesn't mean anything. Like, even the name is stupid. Like, it's meant to sound like small and diminutive.
Like baby talk.
Exactly. Mm. It's literally meant to sound like baby babble. I think it's like the Russian word for hobby horse. Like, you know, it's all associated with like toys and being playful and like being, you know, silly, goofy, not really meaning anything. But what's quite interesting, and there's like quite a lot of people weirdly on TikTok who are talking about Dada at the moment, which is, how does Dada as a movement, which is kind of born out of conflict but is very like silly, relate to like modern meme culture? which is also very inane, doesn't really mean anything, is quite sort of fleeting. So what I wanted to kind of do was take you through this guy called Tristan Tzara, T-Z-A-R-A, who's kind of like one of the seminal guys within the Dada movement. And he wrote this manifesto. Honestly, for an art movement that doesn't mean anything, the manifesto is ridiculous and it's so annoying and it's very long and it's absurd, no pun intended. And then kind of compare that and we can sort of discuss what's going on in, like, you know, modern internet culture and stuff like that, if that sounds interesting.
It sure does.
Sounds very interesting.
Cool. Okay. The most famous piece of Dada art that exists is a piece called The Fountain, which is literally just a toilet that a bunch of Dada artists essentially dragged into an art gallery and they left it and they invented these things called ready-made sculptures, which are essentially, I guess, functional objects, which they've then repositioned in an art context by putting it in a gallery.
Like Tracy Emin's bed?
Kind of, yeah, but that had a more
curated.
Yeah, curatorial aspect, whereas this is literally, they wrote Armut on the side of it, which wasn't even any of their names, and then put it in this art museum.
Mm. It's been in loads of museums. Like, it was in the Tate, it was in the Philadelphia Museum of Art, it was in the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. So it's very much, yeah, in a modern art context, and it's Marcel Duchamp, right?
Well, allegedly. This isn't even relevant to the episode, but basically, the Dada art movement was very bad for looking after the women that were part of it. And there was this really interesting lady called Baroness Elsa von Freytag, Loringhen.
That's an insane name.
Baroness Elsa von Freytag.
And then I think, like, Loringhen or something at the end. Okay. And basically, she was really associated with it. She was, like, a muse for a lot of the seminal, like, male Dada artists, and she always gets sort of written out the story. And some people attribute The Fountain to her work because it was a lot more like her style of art than Duchamp's. But, yeah, and there was also, like, an artist called Man Ray who photographed her a lot.
Yeah, okay. I know, yeah. Man Ray, actually.
You've also got, well, this is three English students talking about art, so bear with us on some things.
Yeah, so, well, I guess, yeah, the relevance of this to literature is that we're going to compare it to the art manifesto that they wrote is worth mentioning. I did a special option paper on this at uni on Dada and wrote an extended essay on this, and it did not get good feedback.
What feedback did it get?
Just kind of like, just not positive.
Okay.
Your essay wanders all over the place. And so,
but that's essentially the style of Dadaism.
Well,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, this is
how do you write well
protest.
About something, about a movement that means nothing? Like, how do you write about, yeah.
Exactly. As I mentioned before, the manifesto is very long and it's very annoying. And I just want to read you some select quotes from it. I write a manifesto and I want nothing, yet I say certain things, and in principle I am against manifestos, as I am also against principles, half pints to measure the moral value of every phrase too convenient, approximation was invented by the impressions. I write this manifesto to show that people can perform contrary actions together whilst taking one fresh gulp of air. I am against action, for continuous contradiction, for affirmation too. I'm neither for nor against, and I do not explain because I hate common sense.
Is that how the whole thing continues?
Yeah, it's absolute.
It does sound like
balderdash.
Nonsense poetry.
It does sound like nonsense poetry.
Yeah.
It sounds like in Alice in Wonderland, she'd bump into a character, yeah. And that is how a character would speak.
Yeah, like all the contradictions and the kind of, yeah, sentences that don't mean anything, actually.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of, the parallels between Dada and nonsense poetry is all about the sense of play, and it's just about joy, and it's about having fun with words. And
that, you know, didn't feel very joyful.
No, they aren't very joyful.
Well, sometimes there's a dark, like a lot of Edward Lear, the nonsense poetry of Edward Lear, sometimes it has a darker inflection. It's on the surface it can be silly, but tonally sometimes if you read into it, it can be darker as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is the, what's so interesting about things that are modelled around the idea of play is often they do explore darker stuff. Like Dada, who were, you know, dragging fountains into art galleries to be like, haha, we're so silly and playful. That was all done as like a protest against World War One and all the crazy shit going on in politics at the moment. Which also kind of brings us to, how does this relate to like modern internet culture?
Like, would you say Italian brain rot came
very much so
out of
Ballerina Cappuccina.
Yeah.
6-7.
Skibbity Toilet.
Skibbity Toilet.
I don't even know what that is, but I'm going to pretend.
My little cousins were trying to explain it to me. Okay. I felt so old.
Yeah. Well, actually, for three people that are interested in very similar things, I believe we're on quite different sections of the internet. Regardless of how much time we spend, I reckon that our algorithms are pretty different.
Yours is very, because Emmeline will often sit me down and show me TikToks.
It's like send me against my will.
Yeah, I'm like, you will sit down and watch this that I found funny. You're just like a surrogate for a partner. It's like, yeah. Like, so what you have to do.
But I feel like the stuff that comes up on your feed is not what comes up on mine.
Yeah.
Which is surprising given that demographically,
yeah,
you know, you would think that the algorithm would lump us into the same kind of pool.
Yeah.
Just a young,
which means
woman,
I'm pretty sure you're definitely the most meme literate.
Yeah. What, my badge of shame?
Or of honour.
I think
where
Twitter
it pride.
Does help with that, actually.
Yeah.
I think when I was on Twitter, I was more literate about what was going on online than I am now.
Yeah, there's a lot of fried shit on there as well.
Yeah.
Especially because it's the sort of, like, you know, the dregs of society on there. Because everyone jumped ship after Elon bought it and renamed it X, which was stupid.
They've got Grok on there now.
Yeah. And it's so, someone will say, like,
what's that?
It's like the AI. That's like the embedded into X. Basically, the link between data and modern meme culture is basically we're living in very scary times, especially at the moment. The US is moving mad. The UK is moving mad. AI.
The climate crisis.
Climate crisis, global terror threats, you know, the wake of Brexit. There's all this stuff. Basically, it's a very politically contentious time. And although it's not comparable to the outbreak of a world war, we've lived in quite an interesting age where the threat of it is kind of ever present. Mm. And as a result, people are kind of doing a similar thing where it's like, where can we go to find community, play around and make stuff that doesn't matter and fuck about, basically. And that's where I think the most interesting comparison with data is, which is like, it's this kind of like mini counterculture to like, oh my God, we're actually fucking scared. What can we do about this? That's not, yes, protesting really important, but how do you like empty your brain out as
well? So one of the reasons why TikTok became so successful, because it obviously started as Musical.ly, like an app where people just made dances to music, and there was probably something quite, inane and escapist about people's use of the internet in that specific way. And obviously that platform has only built and developed and morphed into something that is now seismic, but does something which returns to that purpose. Or some people believe it should, which is, kind of nonsense content to a certain extent. Obviously now a lot of people use it for press and promotion, and that's a different thing. And for news, it's sort of snowballed into something else entirely. But I think that was the root of where it came from.
Defo. I mean, everyone got TikTok and it stopped being cringe during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because people are desperate for connection and to have a laugh and stuff. And that's what's really interesting about these little like micro internet communities. Yes, it is brain rot in one ways, but it's like, what is it countering against, which is quite interesting as well.
Yeah.
In terms of further comparisons, it's like a collectivism. So data was all about the collective. It wasn't really about the individuals, which is why they all used kind of weird made up names. And the most famous piece, like The Fountain, says Armut on it. You know, it doesn't say the name of anyone who was actually in data. We've spoken about this a lot on this podcast before, which is about with meme culture and internet culture, you often can't find the root or the source of something. And with memes, especially on TikTok, everyone's just like, you can see a post and then you can just rip it off and then do it yourself with your own face, your own photos. And I thought that was quite data in itself, because it doesn't belong to anyone. And the Dadaists were like very against the ideas of authorship, because they thought that played into like the bourgeoisie, and they thought, you know, it was like pandering to art critics and stuff if you were getting lauded. Mm. One of the things about memes is that they're very fleeting. They're not designed to be grounded with like a single author. They're designed to kind of go off, go into the wind. People have a bit of a giggle about it. Everyone is like this sort of big collective comes, gets behind it, and then it sort of passes into the wind. And part of Zara's data manifesto is, he says, there is no beginning and we are not afraid. We aren't sentimental. We are like a raging wind that rips up the clothes of clouds and prayers. We are preparing the great spectacle of disaster, conflagration and decomposition. So I think it's quite interesting in the idea of, in the art world and in the literary world, there's the whole kind of obsession with what did the author mean behind it and stuff like that. And Dada kind of rips that up because they're basically like, well, the world's about to collapse anyway, so why would we bother with this?
And I think absurdism has been spoken about, I can't think where, I've probably read some kind of think piece, but like absurdism as a response to, you know, what's happening in the world and geopolitics and the climate crisis, etc., is people just, there's one stage which is nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it's existentialism.
Yeah.
And I think millennials definitely kind of grappled with that existentialism of like searching for meaning, but not being able to find meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously it's been so many generations since we had a particularly religious culture, especially in the West.
Yeah.
It's like God has been supplanted by capitalism. And millennials obviously have become very disillusioned with that, with the inability to buy a house and all of that jazz. And then you get to Gen Z and, you know, our age and younger, and it's like, not only are we disillusioned with capitalism and the system that we have now, we're also, we've never lived in a time when things felt promising. And that is what gives way for this nihilism. Like Gen Z has succumbed to nihilism is something that a lot of people are saying that.
Mm.
And that the stage after nihilism, and nihilism being the sort of, well, everyone, we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I'm going to die anyway. Like, what's
yeah,
the point?
Yeah, like, who cares?
And then absurdism is kind of like a natural response to nihilism because it's like, well, we're all going to die anyway, so we may as well have a laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of what Dada artists and meme culture is currently all about. It's like literally nothing matters. We may as well just have a good time.
100%.
It almost links way, way back to, if you've been listening to us for a while, a podcast when we were talking about this idea that with knowledge and awareness can sometimes, particularly about something that's negative, can sometimes also birth an extreme negative reaction.
You make a really interesting point about capitalism being part of that. And obviously the Dadaists are very anti-capitalist. They say, do we make art in order to earn money and keep the dear bourgeoisie happy? Rhymes have the smack of money and inflection slides along the line of the stomach and profile. So again, they were really anti making money and credit and stuff like that. And with memes, like, you can't make money off a meme. And if people get the sense that you are, it'll die imminently.
Well, again, that's interesting because that's a period of, what was they, NFTs?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah,
I forgot about those.
That people did try for a period of time to make money off
the monkey
memes, I guess, and, well, you know, images and any form of kind of visual asset. But, yeah, that, again, that came quite maybe a dark place in the internet with people at the top financially sort of trying to figure out maybe how they could exploit what is a very rich culture, which is the internet.
So the intention behind Dada art and behind memes is the same, which is fleeting, collective, joy, not for financial gain. And when the so-called bourgeoisie, so whether it's art critics or finance guys, get involved, it becomes co-opted. Because interestingly, you know, Fountain as a piece of art was done as a bit of a fuck you to the art world. And it's sold for so much money now, and it belongs in all the art institutions. For example, a 1964 replica of Fountain, so not even the original, which has been destroyed, sold for $1.7 million at Sotheby's in New York in 1999.
Wish I could sell my toilet for that much money.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. But then there's other stuff, like, for example, do you remember the Doge meme?
Yeah.
Of, like, the little dog? It was, like, a little Shiba Inu.
Yeah, don't know. That's a very vintage.
It's an old school meme, and, like, it was just kind of cute, classic.
Very millennial.
Very millennial. People would put their own captions on it. Fucking, the Doge meme was turned into the cryptocurrency Dogecoin, which then became a legitimate crypto.
Oh, I have heard of this.
Yes,
yeah. I have heard of that. Yeah.
And that happened.
I didn't actually know that that's where it came from.
Yeah. Okay. Which is why the symbol for the cryptocurrency is so weird. It's this little, like, blurry picture of a dog. And it was just set up by these two software engineers called Billy Marcus and Jackson Palmer. And they set it up as a joke.
You know that they were out one night. They'd had a few beers.
Yeah. Literally. And this is what's so crazy, because they then left the project in 2015, and now it's a legitimate crypto, because they were like, why are people taking this seriously?
That's crazy.
This is what I mean about when people with money get involved, it just basically rips the heart out of whatever you're making, any art it's made like by the people.
Pat Bateman as well getting co-opted by finance bros. And obviously Bret Easton Ellis wrote American Psycho to be a satire, like we said, well, like you said a couple of episodes ago. And it's like, as soon as the finance bros get their paws on it, they start or taking it seriously when it's not meant to be serious.
Yeah, or just anyone with power. Like Keir Starmer using 6/7 as a meme in a bid for political relevancy.
Lame.
Immediately so just ripped the arse out of the joke. And it was like, man, this fucking sucks now. Yeah. Which is really bad. And then there's other stuff as well. Like, do you remember Pepe the Frog? The meme Pepe?
I do remember Pepe the Frog.
So Pepe the Frog, again, very innocuous, silly meme. You know that that's now like a symbol of the far right.
I think I did know that.
I think, isn't it Groypers used?
I think it actually is Pepe Groypers, to be fair. Frog. But then it's quite weird because certain memes, which start off as collectives, either get dragged into politics, dragged into finance, or actually, those are the two places that it goes.
Or they die. Like they
And then it's only when they die that they actually fulfill their intention and can be described as Dada.
Oh, that's a beautiful. I got shivers. So, that was nicely put.
Basically, the way that this all kind of links back to the joke at the start is if you make something, whether it's art or whether it's a meme, with the concept of fuck 'em, and then the people you're saying fuck 'em to, which is, you know, capitalism and people with power and blah, 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 they then co-opt it, is a huge deal. So TLDR, the death of the bit, is bigger than you think.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. And that's
and we love a good bit.
We love a good bit, which is, I just think it's really interesting because memes are obviously written off as like, oh, like silly Gen Z, like what are they doing? They're spending all day online. But it's like, actually, it's so much bigger than that.
And think of how much joy like bits on like little silly things have brought us in our life. The one that comes to my mind is when we were all at uni together, I had a referee card and a whistle.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, a red card and a yellow card and a little pack of ref notes that we used to take to the pub. And if someone said something out of pocket, they might get a yellow card. Yeah. If you say two things out of pocket, they might be off the pitch. And amazing. little things like that. I guess that's a sort of crazy metaphor for what I'm trying to say, which is that, it's the little pieces of joy that get you quite far through in what is pretty dark times.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Like humour is an essential coping mechanism.
Mm.
And if the people who are responsible, in, by and large, of the climate crisis and other crises are co-opting that humour, are taking that humour, it's like, well, that's not your joke to tell.
Yeah,
Do you guys have a favourite meme?
It's not a meme per se, but just something that I've been seeing a little bit of on TikTok, especially since the Hannah Spencer, the Green Party MP, got elected. In her plumbing overalls.
Is that what she was wearing?
No, I don't know.
She is a plumber.
She is a plumber, though.
Yeah. I just thought she'd like got a nice little knit fit on.
No. Oh, because you're assuming that.
I thought that's what you might be talking about.
No. Okay, so since,
sorry, I'll shut
since
up.
Since the Green MP, Hannah Spencer, has been elected, I've been seeing some sort of more hopecore content on my TikTok feed because I think I am quite susceptible to a doom scroll. Like, I think I'm very guilty of that. And I saw someone posted like a... It had some really... I think it was Come On Eileen playing in the background. Like, it was some like silly British like anthem that you hear in the club. And the caption was like, imagine a world where it's 2029 and the Greens are in power and Zoran... How do you say his name?
Mamdani.
Zoran Mamdani is president of the United States. You know, we have universal basic income. The climate crisis is sorted. It was really just like painting this picture of what our future could look like in a couple of years if we, you know, put our minds to it. And the seeds have already been sown with like in New York and in Denton and what's the place? I always forget the Gretton and Denton. The North, where Hannah Spencer has been elected. You know, there are seeds of hope. And I think I'm trying to...
Yeah. Is that a meme? Up.
It's not a meme. Sorry, I feel like I made it serious.
Can I make it unserious?
Alice, that was a genuinely was a beautiful, lovely sentiment.
It was a really nice point.
I like, what do I have that's funny?
I like the meme of the guy that's looking over its shoulder on the street.
Oh, that's so vintage.
You're such a cute little Facebook mum.
I like that.
That is
one.
Facebook mum.
It is very Facebook mum.
So a lot of the stuff in the algorithm is quite...
It's very... And also the guy that's whispering to that girl in the club.
That is
so old.
Yeah, it was just... Yeah, well...
Are you aware of the... You've met me at a very Chinese time in my life?
No.
Okay, but you know what? Okay.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I feel like my algorithm is fried.
My algorithm clearly wants me to stay in like 2015.
Yeah.
I'm happy there. Yeah. There.
You're pre-Brexit.
There. I'm pre-Brexit.
Online.
Yeah. I'm pre-Brexit, pre-Trump. It's good vibes over
Whereas,
here.
Like, I'll get a meme from my brother who's found it on Instagram Reels. I'm like, oh, this is literally 2 weeks old. I've seen this like 5 times already. It's like really negative.
Like an iPad baby.
Mate, literally. It's actually like revolting. It's really horrible.
Well, I like the one that's like girls who fart versus bitches who shit.
Yeah,
and
that's
I feel like
strong.
I probably sent you.
Yeah. Emily hates
that. I'm all that.
Emily's not on poo memes.
No. I'm on toilet TikTok.
Sure. It all comes back to the fountain.
Yeah, the fountain.
Yeah, true. Yeah. All roads lead back. We can take the final thoughts in two different directions. It's up to you guys. We can either talk about, is it an ick if someone sends you like a meme that you don't think is funny? Or we can talk about, is the fountain art?
But they're both such valid forms of conversation.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe we should take one each.
Yeah.
What do you want?
I'll take the ick one because my partner is on a very different... His algorithm's very different to mine.
Your partner sometimes sends me memes.
Yeah, he probably sends you memes.
I think
as well.
I've been sent a meme by your partner.
He's sometimes a bit too online. Sometimes he sends me something and I'm like, you know, it is funny or it's really sweet because sometimes he's very earnest as well. And then other times, like, he'll do the same thing that Emmeline does where he'll sit me down and he'll be like, because I never watch things. Like, if you send me anything, I'm not watching it. So he'll be like, right, sit down, meme time. And then I'm like, okay. And he's like coming through them with me and I'm like...
You know, that's like, you know, in A Clockwork Orange when they have like hooks and eyes. And it's you spending time with your boyfriend. I know.
And it's like fucking anime or like Warhammer. But because I love him so much and he does make me laugh a lot, he is funny. I can deal with it.
It is.
It's fine.
He's a lovely man. Small price to pay. Emmeline, taking the final thoughts in a totally different direction. Mm. The fountain, is it art? Is it art? Is it meme? Is it something in between?
I think that my... And it's a very personal opinion on art is that it revolves quite a lot around context and discussion and placement and background. And that's why I think with the actual medium of art, when you go to a gallery, you are asked to engage with the year in which that artwork was made, who it was made by, what they want you to take away from that piece, maybe not completely explicitly. And I think that there are a lot of really famous works of art that are meaningful and powerful when you know why they were made. And that sometimes they don't pack a punch on the first hit.
Yeah.
And so I think with that in mind, the context of which that piece was made and the reason for it being made is kind of high artistic value. It's something that is slightly revolutionary, is against the system, is coming from a place of collective endeavor, is considered, and is material. And all of those things, I do think, tick a box for what art could be. But also, I get that it is kind of taking the piss out, quite literally, the piss out of the art world. And can something that is taking the piss out of the art world be art? I think sure. I think a lot of our great artists are doing that, and you know, it might not be the kind of art that is going to get put in a gallery where some of our most celebrated and detailed painters and sculptors exist, but does it exist in the context particularly of modern art? Absolutely. It's an important thing. We're sat here talking about it today, and that's something, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, even if it doesn't, you know, fulfill the original purpose for what it was made. The Dadaists, they didn't like context and stuff, but it's like we've applied context and as a result it's relevant and we're having interesting conversations. Yeah. There's a really great book that you guys should read, which is called Painting the Gallery, which is all about like how to qualify art, and a lot of it is literally just putting it in a building where people come to see art.
Because context is everything.
Because context is everything. You're getting the right people in the room, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And the guy who wrote the book is really interesting because he's a potter, I think.
Oh, cool.
And he always talks about...
Visual cue for the audio listeners. Sophie just did a nice little motion with our hands to what a potter might do.
So he's a potter. And... he's always complaining because he's like, fuck, I'm making all this really cool stuff, but people keep writing it off as craft.
Mm.
People have a very fixed idea of, oh, well, it needs to be a painting or it needs to be whatever, but it's like, you know, these are bourgeoisie notions of art. So yeah, anything that gets you thinking, maybe that's art.
And do not let the bit die.
And don't let the bit die, and don't let Elon Musk get a hold of any meme.
Well, thanks, Soph. That was really interesting.
Oh, well, thanks for entertaining it and for letting me sort of bark about internet culture, you guys.
That was super interesting. And also very, very relevant in the times that we live in.
Woohoo! All right. Thanks so much, ladies.
And thank you to the Roundhouse.
Yes, big
massive
thank
thanks
you.
To Transmission Roundhouse for hosting us, having us, letting us chat shit in their microphones.